Ron and Anian.
The problem they're having is that as the sensors age and they degrade slightly, they're not as crisp and as sharp in terms of change as they once were.
I'm a joker, I'm a smoker, I'm a midnight toker. I sure don't want to hurt no one.
The Car Doctor.
You know why the British drink warm beer?
Because they listen to The Car Doctor Show?
No, because Lucas, the guys who make electrical systems for Jaguar, also make refrigerators.
Really?
Yeah, so they don't, nothing they do works.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, The Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
Hey, it's time to start your engines. 855-560-9900. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor, at your service. Here to help you solve your automotive problem, whatever you've got going on, 855-560-9900. As I've said before, that number's 24/7. You can give us a call, leave a message if we're not on the air. We are here on the radio network across this country on the affiliates. Saturday afternoons between 2 and 4 p.m. Eastern Time. But the 855-560-9900 has a 24/7 number service that Tom Ray, our executive producer, or Motorhead Matt, our new associate producer, will call you and hook you up and get you in queue for the next live broadcast the following week. More information about this radio show as well as podcasting to download manually at cardoctorshow.com. We're also streaming from there if you want to stream the show from cardoctorshow.com, as well as you can get out to TuneIn, iHeart, iTunes, and subscribe and just take everything you want. And click and take the podcast with you wherever you want to go. It was a full moon week at RA Automotive this week, and there's just no other way to describe it as I begin to tell you these series of stories. And yeah,
she's coming down,
and
she didn't know what
she had.
When I found what she was headed for, it was too late.
It really was too late. So we were working in the shop, and it all happened on Friday, yesterday. And I realized, it was just, can I see you up front, please? Yes. And it was an old-time customer that, part of being in a repair shop, you get to know everybody, and you can see how... you go through the births, you go through the divorces, you go through the deaths. You go through a lot of things in a repair shop. You get to know people. And here's a long-term customer that I knew something wasn't right the last couple of years. It was something just, something was coming off the tracks. And yesterday's conversation was she had walked to the shop in the rain because she parked the car a couple of blocks away because there was a tracking device put in the car that was placed there by them that she didn't want them to know the car was at the shop because she was afraid they would come down and hurt me, and she was protecting me, and she was just there to give me the title to the car that she would then go home after that. And all I had to do was give her a ride home. And I'm just trying to fix cars. I mean, I just got to get through my day and fix the pile. And I'm trying to explain to her why, I can't leave and I can't give you a ride home. And at that moment, when I said, I can't give you the ride home, Carpenter Bob walks in because he's working on the shop on a couple of things. He's my perpetual handyman. And he just heard the part about somebody needed a ride home. And Bob's like, I'll give you a ride home. I'm like, no, Bob, you can't give her a ride home. It doesn't work like that. He says, why not? And I said, well, you got to fix the thing in the back room. What thing? You got to fix the boiler in the back room. Go look in the back room, Bob. Get out of here. And Bob leaves. And right around the time where she said she was poisoned by her family, that's when I called the cops, because I kind of took that as pretty serious, like what's really going on here. And, it's sad. It's we kid about it, but it's a sad state of affairs. But I think it also highlights the responsibility of what a repair shop is to a lot of communities. And we talk about how auto repair, if it weren't here, what would it look like? And, to a degree, sometimes an auto repair shop is like that corner store, that crisis center to a degree of, where people feel comfortable and safe. And I guess that's, I took that as that, and that's what this individual felt like there. And we brought the police in, and they determined that, you know, something was wrong. The meds weren't working or something. And they took her away to the hospital, and they put her in an ambulance, and off she went. Of course, you know, listen, and I'll say it like this. Walking out the door, she looked at me and she said, thank you for getting me help. I'll be back in 18 days when they let me out. So if I'm not here in 2 weeks or 3 weeks, you know what happened. You know, it's, I'm thinking of going backpacking. Somebody on Facebook offered to take me hiking into the woods where there's no cell service. But I said, with my luck, I'll hear banjo music. So I'm just not going to take anybody up on that at all. Yeah, that was this week. And then this was yesterday. And then after that, just as I think things, and this is a full moon show, so it's okay to talk about this stuff, what goes on in a repair shop. We always talk about that. And then after that, here comes the red Ford Fusion down the road doing clump, clump, clump. And I'm looking up and I realize
you unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound. A dimension of sight. A dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
And we really did, because here comes this red Ford Fusion with two flat tires on the right side. I mean, completely shredded. Just nothing left. And the tire is now wrapping itself up under the wheelhouse. So it kind of lifts the car up about, you know, 8 inches. So it's clump, clump, coming down the road. And it's a regular customer that I recognize. And, you know, the proverbial little old man, mid-70s, maybe late 70s. And he gets out of the car. And he just about falls down when he gets out of the car because he's so nervous, the poor guy, that he didn't realize he didn't have his walker with him. And I had to catch him in the parking lot. And, you know, he tells me, I think I have a problem. Well, let's see. The car's sitting, you know, it's down probably about a foot and a half on the right side because it's got two flat tires. Yeah, I think you've got a problem too. And, you know, it turns out that he had hit a curb about 6.5-7 miles away, and he figured he'd drive over to, you know, he didn't want to bother anybody to get a tow, and he figured he'd save the price of a tow and, you know, this whole long story. And the question was, do you think you can fix the tires? I need the car today. There's nothing left. They're shredded like lettuce. I can fix them, but it's going to be two tires, a set of tire pressure sensors, I'm sure, an alignment. The right wheel is kicked to the right. The left wheel is going straight. I looked at Bob, who was working in the back bathroom. I said, is it a full moon today? It's just like Insanoville. And in between, we fixed all our cars. We did fix all our cars, and we did get out of it. And I guess the point I'm trying to make is sometimes what you get in a repair shop far exceeds what you expect in terms of it's not just repairs. And we can all laugh about this, I guess, to a degree and say, wow, you know, truth is stranger than fiction. But it also demonstrates the point of what people, what you, it made me realize what you, the motoring public, see in the choices you take and make on where you're going to bring your car to get it serviced. And I think that's something not to be discounted, in that you will go to extremes to protect your repair shop and to deal with them. Sometimes you'll drive 7 miles on bad tires, on no tires, just to get it there for fear of having to take it somewhere else. And I think that says a lot. It is a little humorous, and it's a little sad and dramatic all at the same time, that, you know, but it did, I will say this, it did open my eyes, and I was able to contact this gentleman's family, and we're going to get him an aid now. And so I guess that was two yesterday that I saved in between fixing the seven cars. So you know what, I did walk away with a good feeling. I walked away with a feeling of relief. I did walk away with a feeling of I need a rum and coke at 6 o'clock, and that's a whole nother conversation, because boy, I tell you what, I don't need a drink often. I needed a drink yesterday to settle my nerves. It's whew, you know, like holy cow. But anyway, that was the day in the shop. That was a full moon show. So I realized this could be a full moon show too, but so far it's been pretty calm and normal. We'll see how the rest of this hour pans out. 855-560-9900. I'm Ron Anini, the Car Doctor, crisis counselor, auto mechanic, and radio host extraordinaire, here to take your calls right after this. Hey, welcome back. Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900 is the phone number. You know, we talk a lot about the future and how the internet will intertwine with automobiles and everything's going to be autonomous. And a lot of the topics we talk about, recent press release came out, AllData has teamed up with Google. And I thought this was very interesting. AllData, obviously, we all know is world-class reference information for mechanical shops, body shops, and so on. AllData has teamed up with Google's automotive marketing team to offer a content one-hour webinar on online marketing practices for automotive repair shops this coming July 27th. The presentation will be delivered by Google product specialist Matt Krastofik. I hope I'm pronouncing that name right. The webinar is free, and AllData has sent this invite to their customer database of more than 100,000 shops. You know, you start to look at it, right? Look at the interaction. Look at how the involvement of the internet is just everywhere. You know, I couldn't imagine AllData and Google working together. And then they started doing, AllData started doing searches within their database that kind of struck me like a Google search. And now you see them working together. You can see the influence that Google is having on the automotive world as well as other places. But from our conversation point today, look at the impact and look at how AllData is smart enough to pick up on it and work with them. So just really cool stuff. I imagine there's more information at their website, alldata.com. But you know, or maybe at Google's as well. But if you're a repair shop and you want to, about marketing practices, you want to learn something, look into that a little bit further. I'll try and post this information up on our Car Doctor Facebook page. But clearly, AllData and Google working together, some neat stuff. Let's get over to Pete in Iowa, 07 Chevy Suburban and some electrical problems. Pete, you're on with the Car Doctor. How can I help, sir?
Hey, Ron. Thanks for your time today. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
You're welcome. How can I help?
I've got an 07 Suburban. I've got two electrical issues. I don't know if they're connected or not. First one is the daytime running lights on this car. When you power the car down, you know, they should go off on a timer after so many seconds, and they don't always shut off. In fact, they'll sometimes stay on all night long. Next time, they'll shut off just like they're supposed to. Second issue is the cruise control. Seems like it turns on and off fine, but it won't always set and engage.
Okay.
And so I don't know, again, if those are connected issues or if they're two separate issues.
Do you think that the problems occurred at the same time?
I would say similar time, yeah.
Okay. What's been done to try and repair it? Anything?
No, nothing yet.
All right. The first thing you need to do is do a complete vehicle scan. And when I okay. say that, you know, we don't want to look at OBD2. Not in this case. We want to look at everything. We want to look at every module on the vehicle. All right. I would treat it as, just as you're describing it, I would treat it as two problems with possible a similar solution. This could be a BCM, a body computer module problem. This could also be something as simple as a switch issue for the lights and a bad brake light switch for the cruise control problem. Does it have a P0573 fault code, which would not be uncommon for this, causing the brake light switch input to always read on so it would never set cruise? You know, do you have access to any kind of a scan tool, Peter?
I do.
You know, what you want to do as far as cruise input, what scan tool are you using? Let me ask that question.
It's a Snap-on scanner.
Okay. So Snap-on, what is it, a Solus, a Modus?
Oh boy, I'm sorry, I don't know off the top
okay.
of my head.
But if it's a Snap-on, it should be something fairly newer that you should be able to go in and do a system scan and look at all the controllers and, you know,
okay.
see what they come back with. Now, you know, depending upon what you see there, you know, we'll dictate which way do we go. If we've got fault codes for cruise and we've got fault codes in light circuits, let's diagnose those accordingly. The other real simple test you can do here is, you know, take it down the road, bring up the brake switch PID, all right, and see what it says. Does it show the brake lights? You know, is it recording the brake lights as being on, as if you were depressing the pedal and the switch was on, or does it recognize the
okay.
switch? Is the switch in an, you know, can you, is the switch showing off? Step on the brake pedal, it goes on. Boom, done. We're past that. Let's go on to the next thing. Brake light switches are very, very common on those vehicles for cruise faults. And be careful where you pick the switch from. Make sure it's a good quality piece. A lot of the aftermarket, the cheaper aftermarket pieces, just don't seem to hold up. So just be aware. Do you have an O'Reilly Auto Parts near you?
Yes, we do.
You know, you'd probably want to go down to your local O'Reilly Auto Parts and ask them for one of their better quality switches, you know, see what they have. And the nice thing about O'Reilly, I find, is when talking to them, they know what works, they know what doesn't. They get it. Sometimes people are looking for a lesser price part, but if you're looking for, you know, if you're looking for the good stuff, they'll tell you that too. And they'll tell you, yeah, this brand works, keep it, use it, so on and so forth, if it turns into a brake switch problem. If it becomes a body module issue, keep in mind also that you are going to have that flashed, meaning that unless you find a module for exact production options on that vehicle, you're going to have to flash it with software and a separate set of tools to bring it up to level for that vehicle. You're familiar with what I'm talking about? But it would not be uncommon. Now, to your advantage, there are some places out there, I don't remember names off the top of my head, with used ECMs, and you can probably find something based on your VIN or BCM number where maybe the flash will be built right into it. You won't have to go through that, you know, the process of having it flashed. Okay. The other option you've got, and this just became available to us here in New Jersey, our local parts house, Buywise, otherwise known as Samuels, has contracted with DrewTech. Do you know who DrewTech is?
No, I'm not familiar with
that. All right. DrewTech Technology is probably the industry's leader in terms of reflashing. They now have remote access or wrap access flashing, where it's a box probably the size of a laptop, maybe a little bit bigger, that repair shops are being allowed to use. And Buywise has purchased 6 of these. They're going to start handing them out to the better accounts, to the guys that have been to school and training, and they're going to give them the ability to do flashing of all modules, all levels, right in the shop. It's kind of a neat feature, and I think it's something that you're going to see from the better parts houses across the country, because flashing is becoming such a, you know, it's a necessary evil now at this point. You know, it has to be done.
Sure.
So, you know, depending upon if you're not the mechanic, if you have a mechanic, depending upon who he deals with, they may have access to the DrewTech wrap program as well. And that's another alternative. That's another way that you can go about this if it becomes a BCM. All right, sir.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Let us know what you find. If you have any other questions, you know where to find me.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Good luck to you, Pete. Flashing is clearly the way of the future. And in the case of that 07 Suburban, it understand this, there were so many options, there were so many possible scenarios of interior lights, delays, timers, add-on accessories. They don't do it with hardware anymore. They make one box, and they just do it with software, and the software gets installed, and it runs down its list. It's got this, this, this. It doesn't have that, and that's how they make it work and come to the light of day, so to speak. No pun intended. 855-560-9900. Ron and Amy, the Car Doctor. We're up for the last half hour. I'll be back right after this. Don't go away. Ron and Andy and the Car Doctor, we're in it for the money run now. As we get ready for this next half hour, let's go over and talk to Fred, Chicopee, Mass, 91 Nissan Sentra at 855-560-9900. Fred, you're on with the Car Doctor. How can I help?
Yeah, I got a distributor problem.
Okay.
It's seeping oil into the distributor cap for some reason.
Okay.
I was wondering if you ever saw that before. It's got a 1.6.
Yeah, back in the day, we saw lots of that. It was the internal seal in the distributor, and the distributor generally needed to be replaced.
Oh, so I got to replace the whole distributor, huh?
Yeah, now, you know, this was, gee, Fred, it's been a while since we've seen 91 Nissans. Let's face it, it wasn't yesterday. You know, but even then, you know, there was, I think at one point there was a separate seal available, but I'm going to say by now they're probably all gone and you're going to end up having a difficult time finding anything new. It's probably going to become a reman distributor from your local O'Reilly Auto Parts that you're going to want to deal with and just replace the assembly itself. Is it soaking? It's coming out of the inside of the cap, correct?
Yeah, okay. Because I had a problem with it. It started skipping, and I thought, well, this car is good. You know, it sounded like a popcorn maker. I was like, what's going on here?
Right. Just be mindful, you know, that it isn't excessive crankcase pressure. High mileage on the car?
Yeah, it's got 185,000.
Yeah. You know, so you know, just make sure that the PCV system's working and that you've got adequate crankcase vent. But, you know, so you put a distributor in it, it's not a big deal.
But I tried to put a intake manifold in that. That was a fun job.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It's got a metal gasket. I was like, what?
Yeah.
Are you supposed to put anything on those gaskets or you just put it in?
No, you put it in dry.
Because it's
a crushed shoulder gasket, right? It's got raised ribs on it. You're just gonna you know, put it in. That's what you need all your bent wrenches for, to get around all the obstructions.
That was tough.
Yep. So, but I'll tell you what, I bet you that car goes another 100,000 miles if you've been.
I think it's a good car. I took the valve cover off; and it was spotless under there. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, you keep doing oil changes and maintaining it. That's the way they were. You know, that's the way they were, a lot of the older cars. I can't say that about the newer stuff. The newer stuff is made better, and I think the engines hold up and the transits hold up and so on, but the electronics are going to be the undoing on the newer cars because the newer cars, when they get, you know, it's like a computer. It'll run forever and ever until it gets a bad connector or an intermittent electrical gremlin, and I think that's what's going to undo the newer cars in terms of reliability, but we'll see. We'll see where that goes. You were going to say something? I didn't mean to cut you off, Fred.
Yeah, I got another question. I got an 86 Chevy pickup with a 350. What do you think a good carburetor is for that?
Two-barrel, four-barrel?
Four-barrel.
You're looking for performance, or you're just looking for...
No, just a regular driver. It has a quad junk on there now. I just wanted you to go with like a Holley or an Edelbrock. I'm not sure what to go with.
Yeah, I'd probably go with either or, but I got to tell you, that Quadrajet, depending upon what it is... Now, in 86, what sort of computer controls were on that, if anything?
There's nothing. Took everything off.
Yeah. I mean, a basic Quadrajet?
But it has the electronic in it. You know what I mean? It has that plug-in in there, so.
It does.
I got everything unhooked, but.
Okay. You know, well, then what's wrong with finding an older Quadrajet, rebuilding that and bolting that on? You've got the linkage.
Probably what I should do, right?
Right. Well, because the linkage is there. The fuel feed line will be there. There'll be the least amount of modification.
Right.
You know, back in the day, the original Quadrajets were a great carburetor. The metering rods were easy to change. You can work your choke adjustment, no problem. You know,
the only thing I didn't like about it is that the high idle. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. Well, you get an older one, you'll be able to adjust choke on time. You'll be able to adjust fast idle easier. The mid 80s up through till the end of carburetor production wasn't great. But you know, we just went through this. It's a couple of years now, but we had a customer bring us an older Olds 442. It was like a 71 442 that had a Carter AFB on it, and the Carters were okay, but. You know, we wanted the original look, and as easy as going on eBay, we found the serial number carb that we wanted, purchased it. I mean, we bought the carburetor for cheap, bought the carb kit for next to cheap, and rebuilt it. And when the car was done, it looked right. And, you know, that's the other thing I'm thinking about with your truck. If you're going to run, you've got the stock cast iron manifold on it.
Yep.
You know what? You clean up some of the emission control stuff and put a regular Quadrajet on there. I think it'll look better.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit of an air cleaner or even the factory air cleaner. You know what? Back in the day, I was always taught, Fred, mild goes wild and it generally works better. So, you know, unless you're really looking to start having to play and modify and spend more money, I think in the long run, I think a regular production Quadrajet will work best for you for that application, for what you're trying to do.
How about those Holley fuel injection systems? You ever hear anything about those?
Yeah, they work great. They really do.
Oh,
but
they do?
You know, you're going from spending, you know,
$2,500, right?
You know, you just raised your budget from $200 for a carb and a rebuild kit to $2,500 to $3,000. They work phenomenal. Do you need it? Are you going to use it? Is it just something to drool over? You know, listen. I was at breakfast this morning. All right, let's just talk. You sound like a motorhead like me. All right.
Oh yeah, I've been out a while.
I was at breakfast this morning, and I got a. Where was I? I was on Facebook waiting for my eggs to show up, and I got a solicitation message on Facebook. Somebody out there is making keychains in the shape of a 5-speed transmission shifter. You know, it's like a little gadget, $14.95, and you can order them in colors, and it's, you know, first gear, second gear, third gear, fourth gear, fifth gear, reverse. And I looked at it and I said, wow, that's really cool. I got to get about six of those. And then I thought about it. You know what? It's more tchotchke. It's more stuff. How much do I need? All right.
Right.
And I always think about that in terms of trying to put a car together. You know, I'm doing this 72 Monte Carlo. And, you know, I just went through the suspension thing in my head this past week. And I finally decided I'm going to run a factory sway bar. I went out and I purchased a replica 1¼-inch front sway bar and the inch sway bar for the rear. You know, I probably spent, $600-$700 total on suspension between springs, shocks, and sway bars. I could have gone for the from the A-body team up in Detroit, or there's another guy down in North Carolina. I could have gone the $3,000 Hotchkiss flat out, go around the corners at 900 miles an hour. What am I going to do with it? You know, where am I going? And one of the things I've learned, and I always try to get people to think about, and I mean, it's your money, spend it where you want, but always think in terms of how you're going to use the vehicle, because once you get past the pop the hood at the cruise night and everybody goes, wow, and they give you a couple of strokes and you feel better, you got to drive the car. And, you know, once you start doing the fuel injection kit, then the valve covers have to go. Then you've got to start to paint a few things. And before you know it, you're doing a restoration. And that 86 truck that you wanted to go out for ice cream on Friday night to hang out with, all of a sudden you're afraid to drive it, and it becomes this whole nother animal than what you intended. So be careful.
I bought the truck in 88. I had it a couple of years.
Right. So you've had it a couple of years. Be careful how you spend your money. You know what?
Yeah.
Put a Quadrajet on it. Drive it this season. See how you like it. If you don't like the way the Quadrajet works, then, you know, then maybe we'll talk about it.
Manufacturer, right.
Right.
Like all new linkages and double.
Right.
You know, obviously, yeah. So.
It's one thing I've learned about playing with cars, Fred. It's very easy to spend money. All right?
Oh, yeah.
And it's very easy. And, you know, conserving money and making more out of less, that's the real art of hot rodding. Because that's really what hot rodders were. The original hot rodders were recyclers and reinventors and reusers.
Right.
All right. It wasn't
right,
just
monster garage everything.
Right. Yeah. It really wasn't a matter of you know, just as much money as your credit card will allow to, you know, bang zoom and just order stuff and bolt it on. But try a Quadrajet and rebuild that, and I think you'll feel better about the vehicle in the long run. I really do. 855-560-9900. Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor, coming back right after this. Welcome back. Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor, running along here. Let's get over to Hodger. Is that Hodger or Roger in Kentucky? Roger, are you there, sir?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, sir. Is it Roger or Hodger? They've got it spelled wrong.
Hodger.
Oh, I'm sorry. How can I help you today?
Well, I was explaining to the gentleman that I have a 2014 Jetta, Volkswagen Jetta.
Okay.
1.8 turbo.
Right.
Turbo engine. It has almost 80,000 miles on it, and when I the map sensor, the manifold absolute pressure sensor, when I disconnect the sensor, the engine starts well with no problem. But when I try to reconnect it again, the engine shuts off immediately.
Okay.
And I went and took it to a mechanic shop. They told me maybe the sensor is bad. So I went to Volkswagen and bought a new original OEM sensor. I put a new sensor. It does the same thing still. Okay. And then I took it to another mechanic shop. They told me possibly there's a valve train is bad.
Well, we're kind of jumping the gun here. When this problem started, was this a case that, you know, it started one day and the next day you went out and it wouldn't start?
Yes.
All right. And before, you know, what led you? Did you say mass airflow sensor or the MAP sensor? MAP or MAF?
MAP.
MAP.
Life.
Okay.
Yeah.
What led you to the MAP sensor? Just out of curiosity, I mean, just it just seemed like the closest and the easiest thing to unplug, or had you done some research?
No, the technician they run their scanner and they said more likely the MAP sensor is bad, and then they told me the mechanic shop. They told me get a brand new one from the original from the dealership. So
okay.
That's why I went. I bought a very expensive one, almost $100.
Right.
I believe it was $90, $100, around this number. And then when put that one, and then reconnected. The engine was working, but when we reconnected the sensor, the MAP sensor, the engine shuts off immediately.
Okay. So replacing parts based on a fault code, because it sounds like what you're saying is, did it have a fault code for the MAP sensor?
It gave us a P108.
Okay, so it had a fault code, and they just went right to, if it has the fault code, the component's bad. Is that a fair statement?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So what I would like to see somebody do is functionally test the sensor. All right?
Okay.
Just because you have a cold doesn't mean I'm going to give you the same medicine that I give the seven guys that came before you or the three that come after you. Everybody's different, and every failure is different to a degree.
Okay.
So one of the things a good mechanic has to do is functionally test that component. He also has to be smart enough, quite frankly, to look beyond that component failure. You've always got to play. You've always got to play what if in auto repair. All right.
And yes.
I think you know my point. You've always got to play. What if I change this part without testing it, and it still has the same problem? Where will I go next? And then start to look for that. So what generally causes a MAP sensor fault is either that the engine controller, the PCM, doesn't see proper response signal. You know, it's looking to see that manifold vacuum is 18 inches at idle and it sees 12. Or it sees, maybe it sees too much. Maybe it sees 26 and it says, how can that be? For the sensor to have a component failure and trigger a code, in any situation under the hood, the sensor in question had or gave the onboard computer a spat of logic. It just said, hey, I'm this. The computer looks at that, and it looks at the other 14 sensors on any vehicle, and it says, well, wait a minute. Everybody else is doing this, and you're saying that. You must be at fault. It can't physically see or have the ability to test it to the nth degree, and that's why I say a functional test of the sensor is the next step. So it could be as simple as a handheld vacuum gauge with a voltmeter hooked up to the sensor, and we sweep test the sensor. Does it match spec? Or it could be some other things depending upon what exact fault code and what situation we're in. I would go back to the mechanic that diagnosed it and ask him to functionally test the MAP sensor circuit and see what he comes back with. Now, if he looks at you and he says, well, there's no way to do it, find another mechanic because you're at the wrong one. All right. It's as simple as that, if you understand what I'm saying. All right. But there's got to be a way to functionally test that MAP sensor and verify the circuit rather than just replace the part. Okay. It could be that the sensor is good. How do you know what the vacuum reading is on the other side? How do you know the electrical circuit is good? How do you know that it has power, ground, and signal? How do you know that the wire isn't broken leading up to the PCM? So there's a lot to consider and a lot to look at. You do that and you give me a call back next week, 855-560-9900. The Car Doctor's coming back right after this. Hey, welcome back. Ron and Ian, the Car Doctor. Man, I love that music. That's just the best. What a 2 hours this has been, right? Well, I thought it was a lively 2 hours, and it did move right along. Interesting email. Bob Brennan. Bob Brennan's a regular listener to this radio show, and he's chimed in from time to time. And he wrote me an email during the week that artificial intelligence vans are real, but they'll make us, they'll make us suck at driving, warns Boffins. He saw this article on the register.co.uk website regarding how artificial intelligence vehicles, where drivers only need to be in control occasionally, we make drivers worse at driving, much like airplane pilots have become. I guess that's true, right? That with autonomous self-flying planes, you know, planes just about fly themselves today, are there any real pilots left? And to what degree level are pilots really in control of the plane? Which, you know, if you're listening to this podcast and you're flying, don't look out the window.
Well, they do. The pilot is responsible to bring it in and to take it up.
Right.
But while it's in flight, it's pretty much the computer doing everything.
Right. And that's an issue. So Bob also writes that the article also points out that one of the biggest issues he sees with autonomous vehicles, which is this, they only work with infrastructure when the infrastructure of the roads and the highways are all upgraded. But looking at the roads around New Jersey and New York, they can't fix the potholes or the lighted traffic signals. So what makes folks think that they can find the money to upgrade the roads and keep them working? This stops working when you get into rural areas of the United States. Tech and automotive firms, he continues, are pushing driverless car technology on society rather than there being a big demand for it, in the opinion of the Transport Research Laboratory. I think that's true, because I really haven't found anybody that wants, you know, self-driving cars to that nth degree. I think there's a place for it. I think it will help, you know, the older population get around. I think it will help the vision impaired get around. I think that it will help, you know, the person that, you know, can't see at all and so forth get around. But I don't know that we really need it. In a White House paper published today, Transport Research Laboratory fellows' opinion that there is only strong technology push for autonomous vehicles, but also that the potential benefits will only be delivered only if society accepts and adopts automated vehicles, something we've been talking about for a very long time here. Where will it all end? I don't know. I do know this. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. The mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.